Chris and Dave back for one more segment of Packers Therapy to close out the 2015-2016 Packers season. We were talking about the wide receivers before the break, Dave, and we talked about Randall Cobb and about his injury and the guy, you know, coughing up blood, which never is a good sign.
Nope.
He wound up having to stay overnight in the hospital, which is also not good. Having stayed overnight in the hospital recently, that's never a fun deal. It was such a classic Randall Cobb situation, though. I mean, that was a magnificent catch that he had, and of course he gets hurt on it, so that's actually great there too. But something happened there. Now, I guess it's getting down a little bit to the minutia and stuff. But if you recall, that play was negated. Okay.
Right. Two penalties.
Well, there
right?
was actually three. There was one on the Packers and two on the Cardinals.
Right.
Does that seem fair or right? I mean, one of the things that my son Nick said, which, you know, this is the kind of way he views the games, which is one of the reasons why he's fun to watch with. He said, you know, in a situation like that, you know, once there's offsetting penalties, you know, what's to stop the Cardinals from, you know, lighting up everybody they see? Because at that point, it's not going to matter anymore.
Yeah, now, right.
As long as it's just going to be a down over again, why not, you know, take out somebody's knees or do something just totally off the wall? And it seemed to me unfair that, you know, there was two penalties to one, right?
And
wouldn't you think you get a little – I mean, maybe you don't get the catch, but you at least get the yardage because you had one penalty, they had two. But – and this is, I think, was Nick's point. If Arizona had committed five penalties on that play, that was just the same as the one penalty that the Packers had. And it seemed the scales weren't balanced. Do you know what the reasoning or the rationale is behind that thing where, okay, we're just going to do the down over again? It just doesn't seem to make sense.
Yeah, I guess once you commit a penalty, your right to that play is over. But, it is unfair now that you mentioned it. I never really thought about it. Or maybe you say, hey, the next penalty that you get will not count, so you can have a hold or something and just drag some guy to the ground totally interfere with the receiver or something because you get a free flag. But when it's 2-1, I think, both sides had penalties. I think if you have the ability to think quick enough, if you see a couple penalties and you're guarding somebody, why you wouldn't just grab that receiver and, because it's all going to sort of be restarted anyway. But there, I guess there's really no way for you to kind of tell that what's happening as the play's developing. I guess I've never really thought about it. It sounds unfair to me, and it certainly is too bad that on that no play we lost Randall Cobb.
That's the other thing, you know, you wind up losing the guy too. So you not only don't get his catch, you lose the guy, and it's because they had two penalties and you had the one. I mean, you should get something, it seemed like, and it was another one of those examples where it was just kind of Arizona's night, you know. But
that's true.
I wanted to early in the podcast, which was what, about 2 days ago when we started this podcast. We were talking about Eddie Lacy, and Mike McCarthy comes on, basically said, "Dude is fat," which is kind of a funny statement for a guy like Mike McCarthy. but there was a couple of things that I picked up on, because after the games, I'm listening to a bunch of podcasts and I'm reading pretty much everything I get my hands on. Gary Ellerson, who does one of the post game shows with the big eunuch on WSSP out of Milwaukee. He raised the question, you know, is it time for the Packers to look for another solution at running back? And I kind of dismissed it. You know, Ellerson played running back for the Badgers. He played running back for the Packers for a time. And I thought, well, maybe he was, you know, like Lacy, he's from the South. He's from Georgia, and Lacy's from Louisiana. And maybe he's a little harder on him because of their similarities. But then our buddy, Jersey Al, wrote something over at Cheesehead TV that I thought was interesting. And Jersey Al said, for a lot of this season, the Packers would have had no running game if not for James Starks. His slashing style is better suited to the Packers' blocking schemes, and he does a much better job than Lacy finding a hole when there appears not to be one. And his tremendous improvement this season as a receiver, and I consider him to be an essential re-sign for the Packers. I don't know what to think about that. I, I from where I am, I'm actually finding Eddie Lacy to be a more compelling story now. I like him more all the time because now he's a guy who's challenged, you know?
Yeah.
He seems like a pretty cool guy, pretty chill, all that kind of stuff. I like his sense of humor. He seems kind of smart, too. Which I think is pretty cool. Having been raised Catholic, I mean, I like it when Eddie's crossing himself. I think that's pretty cool, too. And so his failure this year and his very human and mortal struggles with his weight, which is, as you know, something I struggle with myself. And the fact is, though, that he seems to have a life beyond football, which is both maddening for me and also makes me admire.
How dare he?
Yeah, you know,
right.
I mean, it makes him, all of this stuff actually makes me more of a fan of Eddie Lacy and hoping that, you know, he comes back and he gets another 1,000-yard season and he, you know, redoubles his efforts and commitment to the game. I mean, earlier in the year, he spoke with great humility about, you know, not taking for granted what he's been giving, what he's been given, and he needed to have his attitude kind of adjusted. And, you know, that was a lot of humility that you usually don't get from a football player. And I saw kind of an inner depth there in the guy. And I guess I don't want them to give up on Eddie Lacy. I want Eddie Lacy to get another shot now more than I did before when I just thought he was a guy that didn't like football and didn't care enough to do the right things. I'm really behind the guy now, and I don't know if your opinion – you've always been an Eddie Lacy fan. I don't know if your opinion has changed now about him, you know, given how he's had a subpar season and now it's come out that the team knew that he was out of shape. And how do you feel now about Eddie Lacy, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
That's a great question. I think this has got to be the off season where he dedicates himself to football. His contract, he's going to be restricted free agent next year, I guess. So this is the time for him to make money and set himself up for the future. Can he, in the off season, go to a Don Beebe camp or whatever it is that they do, or go work out with some other stud? You know, you always hear Larry Fitzgerald's always working out with somebody. You know, can Eddie Lacy do that sort of commitment in the offseason and come back, you know, trim and ready to go? I think he's a guy. Yeah, I love his attitude. He's not a jerk. He seems like a likable guy. He seems that people like him on the sidelines. But I got to see him make the effort that my emotions are giving to him.
Yeah,
right. I don't want a guy who's just going to sort of give you 80-70% of his time and worry about other things in life. You know, go let us get somebody else. The other thing, too, is I don't know if Starks is a perfect complement to Lacy. I mean, he catches the ball a little bit better. He's a slasher instead of a guy that sort of bowls guys over. But I think the extreme, I think they need another back. I don't know if it's along with these two guys or if it's maybe instead of Starks, but a third down guy that is a very good runner and a very good receiver.
I have heard that from others, and that would be, I mean, that would be really a great guy to have. You remember Tony Fisher?
He
was that kind of guy who could, you know, catch the ball and really
better
good
than that, right?
I'm sorry?
But better than that, you know, not just a guy. I think Tony Fisher was kind of a guy, but that was his role. I think he was a good blocker. And
caught the ball out of the backfield. He could run on a draw play, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and think of when defenses play man-to-man with one safety deep and they cover all your receivers and you're running these 10-yard routes. If you had a guy that just popped out and cut across the middle on a linebacker that like they do against A.J. Hawk all the time, you would think he'd catch the ball and have 20 yards in front of him every time, unless you're going to all of a sudden like, all right, we need to pay attention to this. We need to bring the safety sort of in, or maybe we got to break out of this and do zone because this guy is killing us. Well, Starks and Lacy don't give you that threat. Starks, maybe a little bit better catcher, but he dropped a ton of balls. And Lacy, I think, can catch better, but it takes a while to kind of get started. So I don't think either of those guys fit that mold. And being a passing offense, I mean, this is something New England has certainly figured out. They get these quick little guys that they can kind of jut out and cut.
Like James White, the former Badger.
Yeah, or Woodhead, or, you know, these kind of guys that just accumulate yards on drives when their receivers are being covered. That seems another yet mystery of how the Packers are put together from a GM perspective, that they do not have backs that are effective in the passing game. So if Lacy comes back in the same shape, I think that they will cut him.
I think Starks was effective this year. I think he was like fifth on the team. He had like 43 catches. You know, I think Starks was a factor, especially on screen passes.
He was okay, but I'm talking about a fast guy. I mean, a guy, I don't know who would be, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what I want to do. I'll tell you straight up, and it's not going to happen. But, you know, San Diego was very displeased with Melvin Gordon. He fumbled too much. He wasn't getting the hole, blah, blah, blah. You know, if they're not happy with him, fine. That's a reclamation project I would take. Because to me, that guy is Amon Green, you know.
Would you trade him straight up for Lacy?
Oh, without a question.
Yeah.
But San Diego would never do it because they invested a first round pick. Lacy was a second, and he's got baggage.
He's got some mileage on him. Yep.
He's got baggage around his midsection, and so that's not going to be good. It would cost you probably Lacy plus a draft choice. Like a second.
Well, I don't know. But Gordon has not proven himself in the NFL, so you'd be taking potential versus, you know, some proven production with the bag.
Green Bay. Oh.
Well, you know, those are all pipe dreams that Ted Thompson won't even think about.
No, and that is true. And it'll be interesting to me to see what they do, because at the minimum they're going to bring in more competition. And the running backs they've brought in, and not that these guys, you know, can't be effective, but, you know, the dude that they were playing with this season who played at North Dakota State, where he set all kinds of records, and he was a good story for that one game where he had four or five good carries. And, you know,
Crockett?
John Crockett or Davy Crockett or, yeah. You know, it just...
No, not that guy. You know, that can't be your backup.
But
that's, street that's free
the
agents.
Kind of guy, that's the kind of guy that they tend to go after and get. Although I know that both Starks and Lacy, both draft choices. I wonder if they're going to, you know, look at a draft choice here. Not early on because they have greater needs, but I wonder if they won't use a pick because I think they do need competition for Eddie Lacy. I mean, he is kind of on the bubble right now, and it'll be interesting to see how he comes into camp. I mean, he'll never be thin. I mean, he's not got that body type.
No, and you don't want him to be, you know, lose that ability to bowl somebody over.
Yeah, but you want him to be 230
in shape.
235.
Yeah.
You don't want him to be 265. And I think that's probably the problem here.
Draft pick wise, the first three, it's best available of an offensive lineman, I think, a wide receiver, or an inside linebacker, or maybe a multiple different linebackers. Those are the things they need to go after. They're pretty set in a lot of other places. If they go out and get, and I think with the running back, there are a lot of running backs out there. I think there are a lot of, you know, if I even think like a Darren Sproles. I don't know if that guy.
A lot of mileage
around
on him, but he's the prototypical third down back. A younger Darren Sproles would be terrific.
Well, that would be great. But, I mean, say he floats around free agency. If the Packers pick him up and say, hey, Darren, this is what's going to happen. When you're going to block, you're going to chip, you know, a rusher, and then you're going to pop out. And if no one's not open, we're going to toss it to you and let you, you know, do what you will with it. That guy could, and the way the defenses were playing the Packers, I feel like that guy could get 100 yards a game. I mean, that would just be open all the time. Starks, you know, Lacy can't get going. Starks kind of catches the ball, sort of like sets himself, and then he runs. You know, they're not fluid pass catchers, and they don't, you know, once they get ahead of steam on them, they do okay. But I think this offense demands a running back that could be used in the passing game.
It would be nice if they had a quarterback who was content going with a check down. And
I
think part of the problem with throwing to the running backs is that someone has to throw the running backs. You can't always be looking downfield for the big play. And, you know, I mean, I'm glad Rodgers, you know, wants to make sure that there's a big play and doesn't settle for the check down. But sometimes, you know, I would rather gain, you know, 6 yards and, you know, move the chains or at least advance the ball than, you know, try to, you know, go downfield, fit it in there, you know, and try to get 17 yards and winds up being incomplete.
Well, yeah, or staring 17 yards down the field all the time and then not throwing,
He's waiting for guys to get separation because he doesn't want to risk the interception because those are lethal. And the guys this year just weren't getting that separation for whatever reason. You know, it was a thing that kind of built on itself. You know, but we were talking about off-season moves, and I want to read some more from Jersey Al, who he's a heck of a writer, by the way. Besides being the guy that brought us over to Packers Talk. He wrote in his article that Ted Thompson is going to earn his money this offseason. Looking at the list of contributors that will be free agents and potential holes to fill, since he can't resign all of those players, it's not going to be easy, folks. He notes that Mike Neal, Nick Perry, B.J. Raji, LaTroy Guyon, Casey Hayward, James Starks, Mason Crosby, John Kuhn, and then add in the possibility that Peppers may not be brought back for the final year of his contract, and there's existing holes at tight end, inside linebacker, and you've got major work to be done. This may sound crazy, but from that list, Jersey Al says that his priority re-signs are Mason Crosby and James Starks. He said he'd have to go with Neal over Perry, which I would probably agree with.
Yeah, I don't know. Perry really showed up at the end.
He really did, but he's missed a lot of time with injury.
Yeah, he
and Jersey Al also said that he'd be okay with the likely cheaper 2016 option of going with LaTroy Guyon over B.J. Raji at nose tackle. So what do you think about what Jersey Al has to say there?
You know, on the defense, boy, I'd like to keep everyone together for one more year.
Yeah, I
feel like the defense was really coming together. They had defensive line and their defensive backs, I thought, were really outstanding. I thought, defensive line in particular was getting pressure from that front, four, and was getting pressure. And I wish they could keep, even though Neal and Perry are one of those kind of just a guy for a long time, I felt like they were kind of coming on at the end. And B.J. Raji was playing very, very strong too. There are very few games that we just got killed in the run game. Put a good inside linebacker, a very good inside linebacker, and put Matthews back on the outside. I think this defense could be a Super Bowl-type defense. We have a ton of money under the cap. There's no way we can't figure out to keep a lot of these guys. But I guess if I had to – Mason Crosby, I disagree with Starks. I think that you can get a James Starks out there relatively cheap. So if you want to save the money, I let Starks go. But Raji, Neal, Perry, I mean, Guyon, I wasn't that very impressed with, but watching him play recently, he was pretty tough.
He was, as the season, he was out of sync when he came back from being away. But he, I thought, got traction. But you go with both Guyon and Raji, or you trust it to Mike Pennell, who's, I think, entering his third year.
He looked good.
Maybe he's a guy, but those big dudes, it seems like you need more of them because they tend to get hurt because they're getting banged around all the time.
Yeah.
So,
right.
If they could do both of those guys, that would be great. But I think BJ's looking to cash in. So it might be cheaper to keep Guyon, but I think Guyon might be a little older than B.J. Raji. So you've got that to worry about.
If B.J. is going to get a big contract, then I'd say I'd let him go. B.J. Raji, he would make a very good play once or twice a game.
Mm-hmm.
Is he worth a lot of money to – I mean, I think ultimately you need pass rushers in this league. So I guess I would rather – I think I'm really intrigued with how Nick Perry and Neal were improving.
Yeah.
I'd sort of like to maybe see those guys stay and maybe one of Guyon or Raji, and hopefully you can kind of backfill with something. But they got to go out and find middle linebacker somewhere.
You got to have the inside guys. There's no question about it.
Hope Ryan steps up and gets someone new that is a not average, not just a guy, but a good, good player, and get Matthews back on the outside. And then you've got a really interesting defense.
Now, implicit in all of this, when we're talking about the guys who are free agents, Julius Peppers is not a free agent, but he will be 36 years old. Do you keep him around, or do you thank him for his service and then focus on re-signing Neal and Perry?
Yeah, I'd let him go. I would let him go. The guy takes too many plays off. Someone said he was the one who didn't cover Larry Fitzgerald and is the blown up play at the end. I think the guy is when he wants to play, he's great. But if you can save a lot of money, I think I'd let Peppers go and go with younger guys. I just don't see it with Peppers anymore. I kind of soured on him, and I've been talking about that all season. I'll never forgive him for the Seattle. So I think you let him go and save the money.
Yeah, you and Steve True, and I got to be honest, I mean that really turned me off too when he was telling Burnett to take a knee. It's like, oh my God. Yeah. But what I've read about it is that Peppers really wasn't at fault. It was Randall. The rookie should have stayed with Fitzgerald on that play. What Peppers did wrong is he left the zone when the quarterback flushed, and he followed his instinct, right? Go after the quarterback. Yeah. And so it compounded the rookie's mistake. If he had just stood there, stayed, you know, with his big body, and would have made it, if nothing else, would have made it a more difficult throw.
Yeah.
But, you know, at 36, even though he's a freaky athlete, at some point, this older guy's, you know, you just wonder when his clock's going to strike 12. And if you bring him back, maybe he's fine the first seven games, but then he loses it. And at 36, I mean, that's the kind of thing that can happen, that his performance either drops way off or he gets hurt and he's done. And then, you know, then you're in trouble. I guess I do agree with Ted that generally going with younger players are less likely to get injured. Even though both Neil and Perry have injury history, they're younger guys. And you've invested a lot in Neil, you know, converting him from a down lineman to a linebacker. He does seem to kind of be getting it now. I wish he would, you know, finish more. He was one of the guys that had his hands on Palmer on that play that wound up being the 75-yard gain. Wasn't able to finish, and he's done that again and again and again. Nick Perry's been better, but boy, it's taken him a long time to develop some other moves besides a bull rush. And then he's, you know, he's got bad shoulders too. So it's a risk regardless of what you do, but I think they're only going to wind up keeping two out of those three guys. And at this point, I'd probably go with Neil and Perry and, you know, give Julius Peppers his gold watch.
Yeah, I think so. I think you, but there's something too. They do look up to the guy, not just
a
physically.
A lot of respect,
They do. I mean, he's a captain, and I've talked about veteran leadership, but I don't see him as the same role. I think he's a, you know, when they say the guy leads by example, which I think is what you say to someone who's really not much of a leader.
okay.
He comes to the field early and all that kind of stuff. But he's a leader enough that they make him the captain. And so there must be something to that. And so maybe they see some value in him. If you can limit his play, I think they shouldn't play him to the fourth quarter. Make him completely fresh and say, all right, Julius, all we need is 10 minutes from you now. Go play hard the whole time and let these other guys play during the other quarters. But we'll see. I almost don't want to speculate because it's so hard. I don't know the equation of how much cash do you have. I mean, do you have enough to restructure so that you can get everybody in? Then I like all those guys.
Well,
Casey Hayward played.
I was just mentioning Casey Hayward is a tough one.
Well, he played – I remember at the beginning of the season, we were like, this guy is awful.
Yeah.
And he came on and played much, much better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knows the system, and
the
I like what they got
Fitzgerald.
Going, except for that. Now, if they let him go, would I be devastated? No. But I think he's a guy that I thought played a lot better and kind of fills in that parts of the defense that is really important, like Micah Hyde kind of has a role. And I'd like to see this defense stay together, man, just one more year. And I'm even, you know, just keep Don Capers together for another year. I'm not one to say that he's the guy that you got to get rid of. I think they could with it. If they could have an inside linebacker that's actually someone people feared, I think there's a lot around that position that is pretty good. So,
well, here's something to keep in mind. You know, Micah Hyde went out of the game on Saturday with an injury. It was a hip injury again. He's had that all season long. And, you know, you wonder about the severity of that, and you wonder he wasn't a burner to begin with. You know, he and Casey Hayward kind of play the same position. I'm wondering if Micah Hyde's medical situation is going to impact their decision on Casey Hayward. If they don't think Micah Hyde is going to come back at 100%, That may signal that they re-sign Casey Hayward. If they have confidence in Hyde coming back, I think they let Hayward walk.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know, it depends on how much money you have. You got to fill the team with somebody.
Yeah.
So I don't want them, you know, drafting 10 guys and then five more street free agents. And then, hey, we got three street free – or I guess they call them street free
right.
agents, you know,
right.
the undrafted free
right.
agents. We got three guys that made the team. Isn't that awesome? Well, that means that that's the best you had. And
well,
there's a reason why they fall to be undrafted. So I think next
well,
year's team should have no – undrafted
well,
free
but
agents.
Sam, but Sam Shields was a was one of those guys that was not drafted. You know, I mean,
yeah. Well, so, unless they hit the lottery,
he winds up being a Pro Bowl player. You know, and I think that was true with Tremont Williams too, right? They actually got him off of what the Texans practice squad, and he was undrafted. You know, I mean, so there are players. I mean, Gunter played a little bit, and he looked, you know, like he might be okay. He's slow according to the stopwatch. But he played well against Washington.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
but,
there
you
are
know,
players to be had who aren't drafted.
That's possible. I mean, it's not. I'm saying that for every, there's no good reason to have it. But I think they have enough talent, enough things filled. They can sign most of their guys. They should be able to pick draft picks and go for exactly what they need and fill some in. I would trade some draft picks. Get the guy, get the team that you need next year, and let's go win this thing. Let's not just build for the future and the future and the future.
Well, you can only do that, Dave, if guys you need are available. And
that's
sometimes,
true.
I mean, it might be, you know, Ted or those guys might want to look at some free agents, but the people you need, the positions you need are just not there. Those guys aren't available. It's you know, would be great if you say, well, you know, we need a tight end, so we're gonna get, you know, this guy, we're gonna sign him. But it's under contract, he's not available, doesn't want to come to Green Bay. I mean, there's a lot of things that come into that equation, and it will be interesting. You know, it was 2 years ago when they signed Peppers and they signed Guyon. You know, so they didn't do anything last year that I can recall. So maybe, you know, I mean, Ted does seem to be the kind of guy that, you know, will take a year or two off from that and then we'll surprise you. And Guyon's been a real contributor, and obviously, you know, Peppers hit and miss, but, you know, he's made a fair number of big plays too, and he's been an asset. I think you might want to let him go a year early than a year late.
Well, I'm looking at a list of tight ends that are 2016 tight end free agents, some restricted, but Jermaine Gresham from Arizona, Zach Miller, Chicago, Vernon Davis, that's with Denver, who hasn't done very much,
yeah.
Mercedes Lewis from Jacksonville. I know some of these guys I know more from fantasy football than I know from their actual playing. Antonio Gates is a free agent.
But he is – I thought he's going to retire. I mean, he's – quite old. He's
old,
yeah.
But he would be an instant.
I mean, 5 years
upgrade.
Ago, yeah. But yeah.
I think he'll always be better than Richard Rodgers. I mean, there are guys out there. I mean, there's yeah. You know, some of these guys may not be that good. You know, Daniel Fells for New York Giants. I've seen this guy, you know, play. He's a veteran guy. You know, do you want to bring in another rookie to compete with Rodgers and Perillo and Backman? I mean, that's just like a bunch of youngsters that you're just hoping you get the best out of that group. I just hope they don't. They do some. I'd like to see some veterans come in next
so
year.
So are you done now with John Kuhn? I mean, I know people love him, you know, and he didn't play badly this year. And at times, he picked up blitzers and he got some, you know, yardage on the ground. But you drafted Ripkowski, who seems like a younger version of that. And, you know, he is white and Polish, so that will play in northeastern Wisconsin. Do you give John Kuhn his gold watch?
I only know to answer that question as to see how Ripkowski could play, and I have no idea how to answer that. Based on Kuhn's play, I give him another year. If he's not that expensive, I'd take him again. I thought he did not seem, for what he does, he didn't seem to decline that much. So I would give him another year unless they know they got something special in Ripkowski, and then maybe you can move on.
Yeah, Ripkowski, when I've seen him play, I mean, he's a young player. He's not going to, you know, he's not as savvy and smart. I mean, They say Kuhn knows the offense as well as anybody. But Rutkowski pancakes guys. I mean, he is a hammer.
Yeah.
And I'm really intrigued by, you know, a younger, cheaper version of John Kuhn, you know. That's appealing. What I don't know that he has is the smarts, you know, to, you know when a guy is going to be blitzing and to be able to get over there.
Right.
How many times have we seen, you know, Kuhn do that? You know, pick up the guy that comes free, giving Rodgers just enough time to find somebody. And
yep.
That's, you know, that's an important skill, you know. And I agree with you, Dave. I think Kuhn played well enough that if they didn't have Rutkowski and, you know, if I don't know what he's going to cost, he's played well enough to earn another year, you know, with the Packers.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think he deserves another ring.
Well, I've got one more thing to mention. And
all right, better do it quick.
It's sort of a fantasy of mine, and what I wanted to see. You remember that one of the receivers for Arizona, his name was John Brown. Do you remember that? He was one of their starting wide receivers.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the game, you know, where they, you know, Dave from Wheaton College, you know, Chris from UBC. I wish John Brown would have said, John Brown, Harper's Ferry. I just wish he would have said, it would have been so fantastic. I would have loved that to no end.
Harper's Ferry.
John Brown, the insurrectionist who took over the armory at Harper's Ferry and against the government? Yeah.
Yes, that started the Civil War.
I just wish that he would have done that. That would have been hilarious. Would have been fantastic. Now,
I only know that from – I just recently watched I'm reading Killer Angel.
Oh, what a great book.
Then I watched – it's a great book on Civil War, on the Gettysburg battle. And then I started watching Ken Burns' documentary on Netflix on the Civil War, which they go into John Brown, who apparently was not a good guy, but was so against slavery that
he – slaves. He thought it was his religious calling, you know.
Yep.
And so he, you know, took over the armory at Harper's Ferry. And I think this John Brown from the – you know, it could have been an homage by this John Brown to that John Brown who wound up getting hung, I believe, was his – was he – he was either – he was executed in some way, either by firing squad or by noose. And you know who was in charge of that? Robert E. Lee.
Robert E. Lee?
Yes, before he became a Confederate
Switched
general.
Switched to the South?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, the thing is, this podcast is not only about the Packers. This is an educational podcast as well. And we're going to talk about pop culture here in a minute. Killer Angels, fabulous book, won the Pulitzer Prize. And for me, I knew nothing about the Civil War when I read that book. It was a gateway drug for the Civil War. I began then reading all kinds of histories of the Civil War after reading The Killer Angels.
It was very good.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, that puts a bow on the football game. Do we want to do – well, save pop culture, and maybe we might have a few people to acknowledge who
– Betting lines. I got to do
the
betting lines.
Okay, let's start with betting lines, and then I want to acknowledge our correspondents. So let's talk about betting lines.
All right. So betting lines, we had a number of people play. The winner this week is Kevin Becker, who got 5 correct with I don't know how he did on the – I did okay on the tiebreaker, which was who could get close to 0 on James Jones catches. I'll do this very, very quickly. Aaron Rodgers' rating, you set the line at 79. It was 77.9.
Yes.
So you were very, very
Brilliant.
Good. No one got that. The under had it, though. The house wins on that one. Number 2, Eddie Lacy, rushing yards. You said 54. He had 89, so the over was right on that. Arizona rushing yards, you said 106, and they only had 40.
Ooh,
so the
job,
under got on that one. Number of Green Bay drops, you said 3.5. And Mike said 4. I'm counting. I got to see what he said here. I'm counting 2 by Shields. So
yeah.
Fair enough. So there are 4 drops by Green Bay. So the
there was one on
over.
I know that for sure. Yeah.
Yep. Number of catches by tight ends. You said 4.5, and it was 5. So
nice.
They overcot that one.
Nicely done.
Sacks on a number of times. Rodgers gets sacks 4.5. It was only 1, which is a big part of the story. We didn't talk much about the O-line.
Yeah, the O-line did a heck of a job.
See, under got that one. And the total score combined You said the over-under was 45 and it was 46.
I think I need to go to Vegas and get a job in a sports book. I had
and,
a hell of a week.
You did. You're pretty good at this. The tiebreaker was James Jones's receiving yards, which is the
zero.
Lowest we had was 38, and zero would have been the correct answer. Oh, I have the 36 on there. So the winner is Kevin Becker. Kevin not only gets to enjoy the Packer suite for this week, he gets to enjoy it the whole off season, and he can figure out the aftermath of what Dr. Klaus and Mrs. Freeman did during the last week.
I'm sure it was all clean fun and board games.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's all.
I'm sure, yes, and I'm sure Miss Frieden will get a clean bill of health.
That's right. That's right. She's good for another year, I guess. Okay. Well, I think we'd be remiss if we did not thank Michael Miller, our guy Mike, all season long, doing the hard, creating the spreadsheet, and and said, if you guys will do the lines, I will be the administrator for the program. So thank you so much for that. We're very grateful. And thanks to all the people that play, a lot of the same people every week. It seems like you guys enjoy it. We're glad that you do. We're glad to do it. So thanks for participating, and a big thanks to Mike Miller for doing it. And hopefully Mike will be up for doing it again next year. And if you are, we'll come back and do the betting lines again too.
Yeah, huge thanks for me, because I'm the one that has to tabulate that stuff, and I think I might have given up if it wasn't for Mike. So big thank you for me as well.
Absolutely right. So that wraps the season on the betting lines stuff. We'll come back and give that a shot again next year. Now, we had a lot of correspondence this week. I want to make sure I mention as many of them as I can. And it's had some new people, too. We got Max Martinez in on us this week. Once again, we had some nice email exchanges with our guy, with our Apple man, Chuck P., being in touch with us. Of course, Dr. Klaus checking in a couple of times. Also checking out on my hip. I do appreciate that, doctor. Thank you very much. Andrew Hetzel being in touch with us, a graphic designer who's come up with some things for us from time to time. We also had let me see. Oh, we got Robert Cook in touch. Jeremy again. Actually, a lady, Catherine. Also, Vicky Miller. So that's two women this week. Guy from London checking in. It was very nice to see radio personality and co-host of the Green and Gold Today program, Bill Johnson, doing a little corresponding with us on Twitter. We thank you for that.
Oh, what was that about? I didn't see that.
Oh, yes. Well, we were having an exchange here it was in reference to Jeff Janis and Jared Abadaris, and we were discussing, and people were saying, I think it was actually Captain Dave was saying it, didn't understand why, you know, when people saw an Abadaris, and I said, well, it's probably because he's a Wisconsin guy, he was a walk-on at UW, who turned out to be a decent player, and the fact that he's white. And then Bill Johnson jumped into the conversation and said, and Rogers also took a shine to Abadaris right away. He's not a star, but he thinks Jared Abadaris can play, and I do tend to agree with that.
So how did he find you? Was it did you hashtag Packers?
Well, you're saying find you. He's found us, Dave. It doesn't me.
Oh.
He found us.
So is he a subscriber or is he a Twitter follower for Packers Therapy?
Well, he must be, because he saw the conversation and jumped in on it. Yeah, we have over 1,000 people who are following us on Twitter, so that's pretty good.
Well, that's, I guess. It's
There's a lot of shut-ins out there, Dave. There's a lot of shut-ins.
The last couple of weeks, the reach we've had from Packers sisters to authors of articles that you bring up has been pretty amazing. That's been fun.
Yeah, I mean, it has been. Well, in fact, we have a chemist, a PhD in chemistry, Brian from Colorado. Also, besides corresponding on Twitter, he's emails us on the Packer list that we've been on. Pastor Kevin checking in with us.
Pastor Kevin scolded you this week.
Scolded for being filthy, but I do have kind of a potty mouth, but it must have been something else. I think it was my negativity he might have been reacting.
No, I think you said, I remember, yeah, it's your potty mouth.
Well, you know, it's
good comeback.
It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Who else? Larry in touch with us. Cheesehead TV, I think, is following us. Rusty, of course, lots of tweets from Rusty. Jack also checking in with us. We got a couple hits from our guy CD, who is one of our bosses at Packers Talk. We appreciate that. Kira was in touch with us. Mark Lockard, K Squire, which is just kind of a cool. I think it's a guy, but K Squire. So yeah, a lot of people this week because of the game, and we were pretty active this week on Packers Therapy. Now, I still do check the account during the off season, so if you want to correspond with us on Twitter, we're at Packers Therapy. If you also want to send us an email for more extended thought, you can do that as well. It is PackersTherapy@PackersTalk.com. So, we will correspond with you during the course of the off season. If you've got things you want us to talk about, happy to do that with you as well. Thanks to everybody all season long. Who have had dialogue with us. We do appreciate that, and we appreciate the chance to do a little give and take with you, and thank you for your support of the show. We're glad that you enjoy, the nonsense that we throw out there. So, popular culture time, Dave, and you want to lead off here? You put down the challenge. You wanted to come up with a list of top popular culture stuff, right?
Yeah, this was my I want to do this at the end of the year. It's my 2015 top 10 pop culture whatever of the year, and whether it be music, TV, movies, books, whatever it might be. And I want to do that. I think we did that last year. I don't remember anything, so I don't. Maybe we never did. But I want to do that real quick. I'll do my 10, you do your 10, and we'll just go back and forth real quick here.
Sure.
Is that right? All right. So my number 10, this is going reverse order, just so you're understanding. You got the gist?
Actually listened to the gist podcast, which is on my list. So, but don't.
Yeah, okay. Well, then you can say, all right. So my number 10 is I discovered Room Escapes this year, which I mentioned.
Right, yes.
And I absolutely love this stuff. If you have a group outing, and some of them you can do with two people.
You're the best dad ever.
Search for Room Escapes in your city. It is basically a live interactive game that you play. They lock you in a room. They sort of, in quotes, lock you in a room. And you have to solve puzzles in order to get out. And I have done now maybe five or six of them. And every one, it's only an hour long, and it's not cheap. But it is hours of discussion afterward of what did you figure out? How did you solve this or that? If you like games, you like solving problems and puzzles, then check out Room Escapes. That is my number 10.
I will go with what I just mentioned as my number 10. It's a podcast I may have mentioned before when we talked about popular culture. But other than sports stuff, I don't have a lot of podcasts that I follow. But there is one that I do follow on a regular basis, and it's called The Gist. And it is produced by Slate Magazine. It's a 30-minute daily or 5 days a week podcast. News, current events, but done with wit and style. It's fast-paced. There is some language used in it that Pastor Kevin would not approve of, which is another reason why I think it's kind of fun. But they have one particular segment that they do on a regular basis, called basically "Is That Bullshit?" And they have someone who is a researcher, has got a PhD, and they talk about, some commonly held wisdom, and the person looks into it, and they have a dialogue and decide, is that bullshit or not? And so that's one of the things they do. They usually will have one longer segment, usually on a news story or something that is, current events oriented. And then there will be kind of – the reason it's called The Gist is because there will be a segment at the end where the host of the show just kind of vamps on a particular topic. But it's a fast-paced 30 minutes daily podcast. I recommend checking it out. It's from Slate, the website Slate, and it's called The Gist, and I think it's well worth the daily download.
All right, so – my number nine is, at the beginning of the year, I made a New Year's resolution that I was going to read more books. And one of the things I did was I looked at Goodreads' top book in each of their genre categories, and I said I'm going to read each of those number one books. And it did introduce me to a number of books that I never would have read Two is going to make, well, here at number nine, because they're very similar, is one is All the Light We Cannot See. And then that also led me to read The Book Thief, which is, The Book Thief, I think, is a lot of book lists of all-time great books.
I read that this year myself.
They both take place during World War II. Yep. They both have to do with young children sort of seeing. One is All the Light We Cannot See is a blind girl and a story of a boy that's in World War II. And Book Thief is about a particular girl in that story. But both of those books were just outstanding. Not necessarily the ones that will lift your spirits at the end, but very, very excellent books. And so those are my number nine.
Yeah, I'm just gonna use my number nine to just ditto you on The Book Thief.
Really?
It's one of my wife's favorite books. She's asked me for a while to read it. I read it this year. It's heartbreaking. It's beautifully written. I strongly recommend this book. It'll make you laugh and make you cry. Really, really well done story. So definitely check that out, The Book Thief.
Okay, my number eight is my podcast, which is interesting. We're mirroring each other. I have a number of podcasts I listen to. A lot of them, once we get into the season, are Packer-related. But the two that I don't listen to are not Packer-related. One I just love, I listen to just about every single one. It's where I get a lot of my pop culture in the first place, is Slash Filmcast. I think the three guys that do Slash Filmcast are excellent, and they talk about movies and TV shows, a lot of Netflix stuff that's coming out they talk about. They've pointed me to a lot of good TV. And then I also have been listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour, which is an NPR show, and they do some of the similar things where they talk about what's current. So they'll point out things that I may not see myself. They do a thing at the end where they say, what are the things that are making us happy? And they'll talk about, you know, everyone kind of has their few minutes to talk about some new things that are happening, and they pointed me to books or movies. Both of those are must-listens for me, and I really enjoy, and I drive to work on those. That's my number eight.
You know, I'm going to go with another book. I think I mentioned this during the football season, because I think I read the book in the fall or late summer, and you know, I'm a guy. I like the popular music, Dave.
Yes.
And in light of the recent passing of Glenn Frey, I am going to talk about a book that is called Sound Man. It's by Glyn Johns, and Glyn Johns was the original producer for the Eagles. But he also produced another band called the Rolling Stones. He also did The Who. The Who's next album was one of his productions. He did the early Steve Miller records. He even did the Ozark Mountain Daredevils. Guy was started in the early 60s and had a very long career as an engineer and a producer. He's British, and he has just terrific anecdotes. And if you like pop music, this is something I think is definitely a must read, because this guy was on the ground floor of the creation of some of the most memorable and notable rock and roll, alt country stuff. I strongly recommend it if you like that kind of thing. The guy's he was at ground zero for all of this. And Glyn Johns is the name of the author, and the book is called Sound Man.
All right, that's your number eight.
Yeah.
All right, my number seven is I will pick one particular TV show, but I will say that this was a year of great TV watching for me. Netflix,
yep.
HBO, none of them are on network TV. It's all cable or channels that I think are the great. And most of them aren't the Game of Thrones, you know, the big ones. I found a number of them that I thought were kind of off the beaten path, like Rectify, Black Mirror. Mm-hmm. Sense8, what's on Netflix.
Just started watching that, yep.
Mr. Robot, I mean, there is a bunch that were good, but my favorite of the bunch was the second season of The Leftovers. And I think I would enjoy Fargo, and it might be up there too, I haven't finished yet. But The Leftovers just blew me away. And I did listen to a podcast kind of going through all the details around it, and that helped me appreciate all that was going on, because there's so much that I just would miss. And it's definitely not a season you should pick up without watching season one. And it's not for everyone. But I tell you, there would be – everyone's going to sleep, and I go downstairs and watch, you know, a season of Leftovers. And it would be sort of out of this world kind of a story. I really loved it. So Leftovers season two is my number seven.
Well, I'm you know, that's on my list too. I don't know if I put it at number seven, but I will for this because you just talked about it, and I will agree with you. I have to say, and I mentioned before on our podcast when we talk about popular culture, it took me a while to kind of get the scent on the Leftovers in the first year. But once I did, it became a very compelling must-watch program. And in the second season, there was one episode, and I do believe we've talked about this in the past, an episode called International Assassin. And it was offbeat, quirky. To me, it was several different kinds of brilliant.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that before.
It was absolutely well done. I mean, and just underscored. The thing is, though, you have to really kind of watch what leads up to it to really understand why that particular episode was so magnificent and so good. The Leftovers, it's you have to give it a chance. But I think if you do, I think you'll find the payoffs to be really rewarding, and I would agree with you, Dave, entirely. That's a definitely something you wanna check out, you'll wanna watch.
Okay, my number six is The Jinx.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about The Jinx.
Yep. Good show.
And it's been some time since I've seen it, so it faded a little bit. But I remember when I watched it, I was completely taken away by it, and the ending is amazing. And so if you have not watched this, I would rush to see it. Don't read anything about it and just watch it straight like I did. I really knew nothing about the family or the murders that took place, and just watching it was so fascinating and so well done. And the amount of time that went in to build something like this, I mean, movies take years,
mm-hmm.
but these documentaries take, some would take over a decade. So much time is put in. It's so satisfying and interesting because it's literally real life. I mean, you're not using even actors, you're using the real people. And this one has such a payoff that it actually becomes part of the story. So that is an HBO show, The Jinx. That's my number six.
I like The Jinx a lot, too. I'm going to be very clear. I thought it was great and was really, really well worth watching. But in that slot for me is going to be Making a Murderer. It's probably on your list, too, but maybe further up, Dave. A lot of people now, maybe it's almost cliche, there's been so much discussion recently about this because it came out just before Christmas time, and a lot of people, I think, spent the holidays kind of watching this 10-hour, 10-part series on Netflix. And I strongly recommend it. And, you know, I'm a little biased. You know, Dave and I are from Wisconsin, and so this is set in Wisconsin. So it's something that if you're one of the five people who haven't yet watched it, I would say get a Netflix subscription. Check this thing out. Whether or not you agree with kind of the slant of the series, it is definitely worth watching. It's compelling, good stuff. Making a Murderer. Not that The Jinx isn't bad. It's very good and it's worth watching. Didn't make my list, but as a similar kind of program in this slot, I'll put Making a Murderer.
Okay. Number five is my favorite movie, but not my top listed movie, which I'll explain. But my favorite movie of the year was Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, really?
Now,
okay.
Mad Max
Fury
Road.
That's been nominated for Academy Award for Best Picture.
Yes, so I have recommended and have watched Mad Max because I bought the movie with my wife, with my daughters, other people who watched it and looked at me at the end like, what in the world did I just watch and why did you make me watch it? And I just like, look, this movie is changing the way that I think action movies will be made. It's so well done. It's an unbelievable experience. My son really likes it too. And it's not just me. I mean, critics and the Academy Awards and the Golden Globes, I mean, this is not a movie that's just a stupid action movie. It's an amazing movie. If you could see it on the biggest screen possible with the loudest speakers possible, I would recommend it. But it certainly is not for everyone. It's weird, and you just have to go with it. There's not a whole lot of plot in this. There's not a lot of twists and turn. It is just jam-packed action movie, which is amazing. That's my number five.
Both of my sons liked that movie a great deal, and were trying to get me to watch it while Nick
You'll
was visiting
it.
Here. And I have a bias built in from the very first Mad Max. It was not my thing. In fact, we had a discussion about this when Nick was here. You know, kind of this dystopian thing. When the more fantasy the science fiction is, the less I can anchor onto it. So I like my dystopian stuff to have some kind of anchoring. For instance, there's the dystopian view in Man in the High Castle. It's an alternate history. It's a reality. I can kind of anchor in reality, and I can then go with it in the same way that you can go with it in the Twilight Zone. You know, those kind of things. So I never had the bug on the Mad Max thing. But what kind of got me is the fact that, you know, people have nominated this for Academy Award. I think, well, maybe I need to rethink this, or at least this.
It could win.
Movie. Yeah, yeah.
I think it could win. I think it's a dark horse for sure because of the kind of movie it is. But I think where Revenant is getting all this buzz.
Right.
I think you could see someone say, look, Leonardo spent all that time in the cold water, but this is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of movie. It's kind of like The Matrix,
mm-hmm.
It really not only was a great movie, but it changed how movies were made. I think that's what Mad Max is like, but I don't think you'll like it.
Did you see The Revenant?
No, not yet.
Okay, I in fact did see it this past week, because I wanted to see what all the buzz was about. And all I'll say is it didn't make my list of top 10. But the interesting thing is, do you see The Martian?
I did.
Well, The Revenant's basically that, but just in a different setting. You know,
okay.
a guy left for dead by his companions and his journey back. I mean, it's essentially my wife pointed this out. It's essentially the same story, just in a different setting. You know.
Well, that's one of my son and I's favorite thing to do is take a movie and distill its plot down to a very simple line. Like Star Wars Episode IV is an old man and a young boy go to a bar. Is basically that. That's a good man left alone seeks his way back. That's a good tagline for The Martian. That is also a very good movie, but that one didn't make my list.
Yeah, it didn't make mine either. I guess, you know. This is technically, I guess, a late 2014 release. I didn't see it till 2015. I really enjoyed Gone Girl, and I would put that on my list. In fact, I saw it twice. When I don't mind seeing a movie twice, I know it's pretty good, and that's when I did see twice and did enjoy. So I guess even though technically it's 2014, I saw it in 2015, so I'll put that one on the list.
Okay. My number four is my favorite books of the year. Same author, Ernest Cline. Which I think you're going to hear a lot more about. I read two of his books, Ready Player One and Armada. Ready Player One is going to become a movie that I thought I read that Steven Spielberg will be doing. And I think we'll get a lot of buzz. Hopefully if it's Spielberg, it'll probably be a quality movie. But if you were born in the late 60s, kind of grew up in the 80s, like video games, like movies from that era, read Ready Player One, Armada. They're awesome. Very light reads, but a ton of fun, which filled with 80s culture kind of stuff. And so I discovered him this year and loved it. Everyone kind of that I know has read Ready Player One. I read Armada and loved that one. Maybe not as good, but still very, very fun. That's my number four.
Okay. I'm going to go with one you've already mentioned before. I think you mentioned it on your list. You mentioned it, but I'm not sure if it was on your list. Mr. Robot. Which came out of nowhere, and I had a bias. I mean, it was on. I want to say it was on USA, which is not typically a place where you find what I would consider kind of that quote prestige TV kind of thing.
Right.
This was so fresh and inventive and interesting, complicated but in a good way. You know, you had to really pay attention to it. A lot going on in that show, and I would, you know, I would say definitely check this one out, Mr. Robot. I think it's been renewed for a second season too. So the first season makes you want to have a second season. So I guess that's a sign of a good show.
Yeah, the actors is intriguing, right, in that show for sure.
Rami Malek, I believe, is his.
Number three for me is Making a Murderer. I am not quite finished with it. I have one more episode to go, and I've been saving it and not marathoning it because I want it to last. And I basically know it's hard to escape what happened, so, you know, being able to save it and knowing what's kind of ultimately what's going to happen, I'm not too worried about that. But the story itself and the stories within the stories, the evidence, I mean, you can go a thousand directions with this story, and it's true. You know, this, there is no narrator. As you said, it is all just footage and interviews, and it tells the story in a way that a movie, you know, can't. And it's so, so compelling, and it's that much more interesting because it's real life, and it's happening kind of right now. That this the aftermath of what's happening, you know, it's not happened. It didn't happen 200 years ago, and it happened in Wisconsin, which makes it ultimately more interesting for me too. Making a Murderer, that is. Definitely one that you need to go out and watch and get in line with everybody else. That's my number three.
Number three for me is more of a lifetime achievement award, I guess. The series Justified wrapped up this year, and it, you know, the last season was good. I don't know that it was the best season that it's had. But I put it on the list mainly because the whole arc of the show, over the six seasons that it was on, I thought was extremely strong. I mean, even the theme song of the damn thing, you know, is very good. Great performances, really compelling stories. I can't. I mean, this came out of nowhere for me. I had kind of heard of it. But then it was my older son was kept in saying, well, you know, you should really check out this Raylan Givens, and, you know, the U.S. Marshal plays by his own rules. I thought, oh boy, how many times have you heard that, you know? But this wound up being just an absolutely gripping, drawing you in, and a lot of it was because of the texturing done in the area where it's set, which is kind of southeastern Kentucky, coal country. And a lot of it is, you know, the families in the area are very, you know, kind of incestuous, literally and figuratively. And this is a U.S. Marshal that winds up, you know, coming back to, you know, break up, you know, all this heavy-duty crime that's going on. If you saw the movie Winter's Bone, that was the kind of the Jennifer Lawrence breakout.
Yeah.
It kind of has, you know, that feel, that Appalachia feel to it. There's a wry sense of humor, but there's just really good, compelling storytelling. So if you're looking for something to binge watch, it's now completed its run. Justified is one I'd recommend strongly.
Okay. My number two, I have to put it on here because it's just a part of my life, is Star Wars Episode 7, Force Awakens. I have mixed emotions of how much I liked it. I do, at the end of the day, really do like it. I put high expectations on this movie, to say this lightly, as I think most Star Wars fans do. You know, I'm a fairly big Star Wars fan, along with the Packer fan, and I thought the most anticipated movie, maybe I don't know, ever, because it's hard to. When I was a kid, but I mean, it's in the top few. And I thought it was highly enjoyable. I just thought it was going to change my life kind of thing. It didn't. It was very much like Episode 4, but it starts a new era of year after year of watching Star Wars movie. That was super significant for me. And I did think it started off on the right path. I'm excited about the next one. So I'm sure that one's not on your list.
No.
But
no.
Can't not put Star Wars, the new episode, not on my list. So.
I there's movies that I think would be on my list. I just haven't been able to see Bridge of Spies, for instance, which is one I really want to, you know, go and see. I can't put it on the list because I haven't seen it. So I'm going to go back to TV. And there were a couple. I was tempted to put not this high, but on my list, I was tempted to put Halt and Catch Fire because the second season was so good. But I can't put it on there because the first season was, you know. So the second season, if it's very good, and I guess you could probably watch it on its own merits, but I can't put it on the list ahead of a show like Fargo. And Fargo would be number two for me because when I first heard they were going to make this into a TV series, I thought, there's no way you can make that movie into a TV series. And I was pleasantly surprised at how much I enjoyed the first year. The second season, I think, was probably even better. And it was very inventive, the way they actually kind of went back in time to pick up the threads of stories that they talked about in the first season. So it's well-constructed. It's well-played out. It's, again, it's fine storytelling and texturing. As much as I enjoyed, say, Better Call Saul, which had a great first run, I would put Fargo on ahead of that. And this is another one where I think, you know, people should, if you're getting your hip replaced and you need to do some binge watching, Fargo, both seasons, it's a great ride. It's very, very well done. And it's one of those deals where the number of the shows that we've been mentioning, Leftovers, Halt and Catch Fire, the second season better than the first. And I think Fargo is one of those. I think the second, as good as the first season was, second season was even better.
Well, I think Fargo, I'm a couple episodes in, I love it. And I love the first season. And I think it'd probably be up there. I just haven't finished it yet. So my number one is probably the most enjoyable thing that I've done this year. And a nice thing is it's something I haven't just done by myself. I have been playing with my kids. And overall, it's been board games. I've kind of rediscovered the joy of playing board games. And not like Clue or Monopoly, that's kind of a very simplistic, you know, go around the board kind of thing. I mean, there are board games now, if you haven't really paid attention, that are a ton of fun, very complicated. It takes a little bit of time to put together. You know, there'll be thousands of pieces that you sort of have to manage. And so you got to kind of like this sort of thing. But there is a game that Dr. Klaus actually pointed me to. And he's a big reason why I've kind of gotten into it, too, because a couple of times we visited, we've talked a lot about board games, and he's gotten me started. But Pandemic is a – if you're in sort of that thing, Pandemic is a board game that a lot of people sort of know and have. But there is a one that we bought lately. It's called Pandemic Legacy, which you play – it's like what you think. You basically are trying to stop a virus from killing everybody in the world, but you actually play it over 12 different rounds. Each month is a game in and of itself. And as you play it, you open up other parts of the game. There are boxes you get that you don't open yet. Until you get to February. When you get to February, you open the box and it tells you the rules have changed. And you play the game now with the slightly different rules. And if you win, you go this way. If you lose, you go that way. And then if you win, you go to the next month and you open up a new box and the rules change again. And my kids have been playing it with me. And it has been one of the most fun things I've done in a long, long, long time. It's so much fun. Once you know what you're doing, you don't have to kind of re-explain it. You just have to adapt every new slight change of the rules every month. And you're ripping up cards. It will never be played again. I mean, the game can't be played through after you finish the 12 months. You can't start over from January again. It is you play it through one time, and it makes the stakes that much higher. So if you like board games at all and have a couple of people you can play with on a regular basis, Pandemic Legacy has been the most fun. But there are a lot of board games we found this year. Arabian Nights, there's just a number of them that we've really enjoyed, and it's kind of brought a lot of enjoyment to my family. And so that will be another theme in 2016, as we have a bunch of them ready to go. We're just waiting to finish the pandemic. So that is my number one for 2015.
It's kind of funny that a physician would suggest a game to you called Pandemic.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's but you're stopping the virus, so maybe that's his desire.
Well,
that's
exactly what I mean. Yeah, you know.
It's a good thing. Yeah.
Sure.
It's not ironic.
No. I thought it was, you know, it's not surprising. This would be right down his alley, right? Yeah.
Is appropriate.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, got it.
So I'm going to go again. I'm going to go back to TV because I just absolutely love the show The Americans.
Wow.
There is There's absolutely no question. I think it's simply the best show on television. This past year was deeply engrossing. It runs at several different levels. It's a family drama. It's a spy show, you know, and it's a mashup of these two things. Very deep cast of characters, so well acted. It is my favorite show far and away. And just when you think a show is kind of, you know, it's impressing you and, oh my gosh, how are they going to make it more compelling this time? And they find a way to do it. This is The Americans for me. I liked it from the beginning, but I'm liking it more as it goes along. It comes back on in a couple of months, and I keep on waiting to be disappointed. Maybe this is the season they will disappoint me. In fact, now that the lead characters in real life are expecting a baby together. So, real intimacy, I guess. But I can't recommend it enough. Beautifully done show, and I happen to like both of those things. I like, you know, spy novels, spy shows, movies, etc. But, you know, also compelling family dramas also hit me in the sweet spot as well. So this combines two of those things, and it does them both very, very well. So The Americans is at the top of my list.
That's good. It was a good year for TV. You know, TV's taken the place of movies for me.
For me, too.
Yeah, when I have a chance to watch, what's my next TV show? And even books now, I feel like if I need fiction, I go to TV. And I'll use books more for either some fiction that are kind of reads I should read, but I've been doing a lot of more nonfiction type reading because that cultural sort of, you know, scratch that I have to itch is done through TV, which is, you know, that certainly has been true my whole life.
TV has become so good.
Yeah, it's so much to watch.
Yeah, and it's not like the TV that we grew up with as kids, which was kind of shallow and superficial, and it was more of just a delivery method to bring you to a commercial. There is so much good writing out there, good ideas, offbeat, quirkiness. I mean, there's just so much of it, and we mentioned some of these shows now that I find most of the time when you're looking for the drama and the art, I find it more and more on television than I do in movies. And I'll give you an example. When I watched The Martian, and I like Matt Damon. I'm a Matt Damon guy. I mean, I love those Bourne movies. You know, he's been good in pretty much everything he's ever been in. But I found The Martian to be kind of compared to what I'm used to, you know, the Americans or even Homeland and those kind of shows. It seemed like The Martian was more of a, and even though it's a Ridley Scott, you know, thing, it just seemed kind of shallow. I mean, there seemed to be a lot more cliches and laziness. And even though the story was good, it just wasn't. It didn't draw you in, and wasn't as compelling. Even, you know, kind of the feel good ending sort of thing. It just kind of like, oh yeah, well that was a nice entertainment, but you know, let's put on, you know, the 6 feet Under or something like, if you're looking for something that has a lot more
to move
emotional
you, huh?
depth. Yeah.
That's
what it came
right.
down
well,
to.
Well, but that's, you got 2 hours to set up the issue, work on it and resolve it in 2 hours. We're used to,
you know, 10 hours,
10,
yeah.
12 hours, right?
Exactly.
So
yeah.
That it is, you know, and The Martian probably would be a great 10-episode story.
It's a shame that they don't do that then, because I don't want to say I was disappointed, you know, but it was like, all right, you know, that was a nice story. And The Revenant, too, even though I thought that was, in some ways, a better movie, that was kind of dull in some ways, you know.
Yeah,
it was 2.5 hours, and it felt like 2.5 hours. You know?
Well, it just, you know, you get an hour to get used to a character, and now it's winding down, basically. I mean, some shows we watch, I mean, it is season after season, so it could be 50 hours invested in characters that when they die, It means, yeah, you know, you've spent a lot of time with these characters. So.
I'm looking forward to House of Cards coming back on, I think, next month. I think it reappears, or in March. So I'll be looking forward to that when it comes on. And, you know, and let's face it, you know, nowadays, too, you have Netflix and you have Hulu and you have different options right from your home. You don't have to go out. You don't have to deal with crowds. You don't run the risk of, you know, dropping down $10 for something that's lousy.
Right.
You know, instead, you know, you can stay at home and you can really maximize your entertainment dollar through some of this stuff. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it is in lots of ways. I think it's the golden age of TV in that there's so much good TV out there right now.
And it's not even on TV.
That's
it's
right.
It's Netflix. Netflix nailed it this year. There are so many good shows that they put out. Even the stuff that wasn't, you know, I think the best, it was deeply interesting. Sense8, I wouldn't think is awesome, but man, I was totally taken by it, much more so than the crap they throw on NBC or, you know, CSI knockoffs, which I don't care for.
It's such a letdown when you watch most of what's on the major networks.
It's
in terms
really
of
crazy.
Their offerings. I mean, they try with some shows like The Blacklist and things like, but it's just so shallow by comparison. And not that there's not a place for, you know, kind of, you know, junk food, the equivalent of junk food on TV. Because sometimes you want Chicago Fire because it's easy, you know. And it kind of washes over you in 42 minutes, or The Big Bang Theory. I watch Big Bang Theory every week, and it's fine. It's easy. It's 22 minutes. It's pleasant, and it's gone, you know?
Right.
So,
but The Leftovers, that stays with you.
Oh,
yeah, I think if someone that watches The Blacklist and likes that and looks at Leftovers, and I think we are just fundamentally different. And those are probably the people that watch Packer games that just, you know, don't care about wins and losses for 3 or 4 days like I do either. It's an emotional roller coaster with some of these shows, and there's been a number of them this year that have sort of really done a great job.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not you know, ripping The Blacklist. I watch it, but it's just not. I mean, it's got pretensions, but it's just not as well told, and it is not engrossing in the same way. There's not the layering that goes on with some of these more prestige shows. I mean, I enjoy The Good Wife too. I stumble across that.
I heard that's very good.
You know, and it is very, very good. I'm only about 3 seasons into it, and I'm surprised. But that's another Ridley Scott, you know, Ridley and Tony Scott show, and they really did it right, and there are good characters, and that's what makes it good, is because the characters are so well done. And it's also a legal show that actually gets the law part of it, I think, pretty close to the mark. Didn't make my list the top 10 or anything like that, but you know, that's even done for a network show, a CBS show. That one's done at a high level, but it stands out because there's so much that's on, you know, commercial TV that's just, by comparison to these shows that are on you know, the pay services or even on Amazon, which has become, you know, a player in all of this too now with, again, The Man in the High Castle. I mean, geez, it's just no comparison.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
So isn't this a football podcast? It used to be anyway, yeah.
Hopefully people, if they don't are not into the pop culture, don't care much about us, they would have well gone by now. But hopefully that was helpful. I'd love to hear other people's top tens, you know, from what they – if they would email us and tell us what their top 10 for 15 so I can get new ideas, I'd love it. I'd love it. So even if they repeat some of the stuff that we have, I am always up for recommendations. So because we got a long off season.
Yeah, it is. And we will our plan right now, assuming, you know, everything goes to plan and Dave and I are still with you here on this planet, we hope to be, come August. And when the Packers return with their preseason schedule, Dave and I will return with Packers Therapy. In the meantime, it's going to be the draft, and if anything, I guess, dramatic happens where you absolutely positively need to hear from us, I suppose we can probably crawl out of our hole and see if we see our shadow and come back on and do a podcast or two. But failing that, I think this is probably going to wrap up the 2015-2016 season of Packers Therapy. What are we now, Dave, in like episode 271 or something like that? something.
It's 270 something.
Yeah.
It's more than that,
yeah.
I think.
So, you know, so what you can do in the off season is you can go back and listen to the preceding 270 episodes of this thing, and then by the time you finish that, you know, the practice games will be around and we'll be back on. So, Dave, I guess until that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.